everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Dorenda Wilson Podcast. I'm Dorenda, wife to one, mom to eight, nana to 11, and 30-year veteran homeschooling mom. I'm also the author of four books, The Unhurried Homeschooler, The 4-Hour School Day, Unhurried Grace for a Mom's Heart, and my latest book, Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book on homeschooling and raising boys. I hope you'll check those books out. You can find them at Amazon and you can find them at my website. All right. Also, I want to let you know, if you have read The Unhurried Homeschooler, or, well, if you haven't and you like audiobooks, you can now listen to the audiobook from my website, DorendaWilson.com. You can purchase it there. We're really excited to bring that to you because it's been a long time coming. I think I wrote that book about 7 years ago. We finally made an audiobook out of it. So I hope if you love audiobooks, you will go and check that out. Just go to DorendaWilson.com/audiobooks. I'll leave a link in the show notes. Also, I'm going to be speaking in 5, possibly 6 different places during the conference season this year. So I'm going to leave a link in the show notes so that you can see if there's a conference in your area that I'm going to be speaking at. I would love to meet you in person. Now, if you've got teens, be sure to listen after the prayer at the end of this episode to hear about an opportunity you will not want to miss. After hearing about my family's negative experience with CPS, you might be concerned about what CPS could do to your family, and rightly so, but did you know it is possible to reduce your likelihood of being reported just by educating yourself about your state's laws? In addition to offering legal defense for Christian homeschool families, our sponsor, Heritage Defense, has a law and policy vault, which is free to the public. You don't even have to be a member. The vault has summaries of laws in all 50 states covering a variety of issues, ranging from vaccines for homeschoolers to newborn health policies. Understanding the law helps families make better decisions and reduces the likelihood of being falsely reported. I'll leave a link in the show notes to that vault so that you can see the laws in your state. Today, we're going to be talking about homeschooling, not homeschooling, homesteading. But we're going to do it from a little more of a cautionary and humorous perspective. So before we dive into that, I want to remind you that every parent's mission is to equip their child with the best resources. And when it comes to math, CTC Math is the beacon that lights up this path. Its dynamic approach makes it an invaluable tool for both homeschooling families and those seeking supplementary guidance. With lessons that capture attention and ignite curiosity, it has transformed many a reluctant learner into a math enthusiast. Grace, a dedicated mother, shared this: "Witnessing my daughter's newfound enthusiasm and confidence in math has been nothing short of a revelation. Step into this world of enriched learning at ctcmath.com. I'll leave a link in the show notes. All right, so homesteading has become very popular, and with good reason. I'll actually leave a link in the show notes to tell more details about our homesteading experience with our kids, because that's pretty much how we lived our life. That's how we raised our kids, is in a homesteading environment. And so I've got a whole other episode dedicated to just sort of our story of how we ended up there. But homesteading has become popular with good reason. It's a great environment to raise and homeschool kids. It's a great way to be less dependent on the food chain, just to be able to provide for yourself. It's a good way to eat healthier. It's a wonderful way to be out in God's creation more. It's really just an all-around healthy lifestyle. So there are a lot of things that are attractive about that lifestyle. But today we want to talk about some of the cautions that we might give when it comes to that. Because sometimes we don't go into these situations with our eyes wide open. So we're going to be telling some really funny stories about different things that happened to us along the way, things we didn't expect, things we didn't see coming, just to kind of give you a little taste for, hey, you know, it's not all roses and butterflies and rainbows.
And white barns.
But today I invited Brittany to join me. Brittany is my daughter. She's 33 years old, married to Jacob, has 4 kids here, and 1 we call in the target in heaven, our oldest grandson, Isaac. And she's here because she was sort of like the animal person. She's actually one of the big reasons we moved that direction, because from the time she was very little, she loved animals. She wanted to be on a farm. She talked about farm life all the time. And I had been raised on more of an agricultural farm, not one with as many animals, but I just knew living out in the country in any kind of farm setting is just such a great way to raise kids. And I loved that I grew up that way. And I wanted our kids to as well. But Brittany was really passionate about animals. So she was sort of like the one to blaze the trail when it came to acquiring animals, taking care of them and all that. But Brittany, welcome. Thank you for being with me today.
Glad to be here.
All right. So we have had this conversation more than once where we have looked at things trending on social media. And, you know, we don't want to mock anything because, like I said, that lifestyle is really wonderful. Oh, I mean, it's a wonderful way to raise a family. It's a wonderful way to live. But sometimes in our just our human nature, we can end up making anything an idol. Yeah. And I think that after a while, sometimes things like this can become an idol and can cause us to become discontent with the life we already have, right?
Or even not make the most of the life that we have.
Right, because we're constantly dreaming about this life we want to live.
Yeah, how we want it to look.
Yeah, how we want it to look. And, you know, it's sometimes we even, like, without realizing it, we're kind of thinking it's going to solve a lot of our problems. And
that if we could just get to that season, then we would be, everything would be perfectly peachy.
Right. And or at least mostly peachy. It would solve, you know, like maybe this problem, that problem. We maybe have this, what I would call, I actually was going to use the term pipe dream, but then I thought, do I really know what that means? I should probably look it up before I do that. And it actually was a good term. It was an unrealistic hope or fantasy. Yeah. So we just wanted to bring a little more reality to the homesteading thing. Yeah. But we wanted to do it with a sense of humor and with just our own experience and
because
some of the
funny,
hilarious stories that we have to tell.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do today is we're going to just kind of like give you a little reality check on homesteading. Maybe it'll be helpful to you to not let yourself go down that road of letting it become an idol or whatever. Still a wonderful thing to work for towards. We wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah. And it gives you a lot of skills you wouldn't otherwise have.
It does. And when our family did it, it wasn't trendy. Like this isn't what people were doing.
This was not popular.
No. And when social media started, which was after we'd been homesteading for a while, it wasn't popular then either. Like nobody, but you can see, and I think it's like, I just want to emphasize, like, I think this is really good.
Overall, it is a very good thing.
It's a very good trend, but y'all just have to listen to these stories. Okay. So do you want me to start or do you want to start?
Oh goodness. Where to start?
Well, how about if I'll start and then you can get ready to tell the stories you want to tell.
Okay.
All right. So I think one of the funniest stories to me that really stands out in my mind when I think about homesteading is when we decided, I think we already had some horses, we had chickens, That was like the first thing we got was chickens.
Yeah.
So we had a bunch of chickens and we'd had them for a while. We decided to get sheep.
Yes. Well, we had goats.
Oh, yeah. We had goats as well.
We had chickens. We had dairy goats.
Started with chickens, went to dairy goats. Also, can I just say, goats are the devil. And the reason I say that is mainly because we never seem to have a really good fencing system.
Yeah, they are the devil if you don't have them contained.
If you don't have them contained, because they get into trouble all the time. So funny story, when we moved from one property to another, we didn't have a bunch of fencing up for one particular. We had one goat. And
two.
Okay. So we're sitting at the dinner table and she comes onto the porch and puts her head off to the side so that she's staring into the dining room while we're trying to eat our meal. And she's looking at us like, hello, I'm here, you know, because she's not contained. That was just a funny situation. But a less funny situation was when one of the kids, we had a little guest house with a futon in it. and the kids forgot to close the slider all the way. And somehow, I mean, it was like not open very much. Somehow this goat opened the slider and went inside. And when my husband went out there in the morning to do his devotions and his quiet time, here's this goat lounging on the futon. She had peed all over it. There was
and that
poop
is a
everywhere.
Very strong smell.
Very strong smell. So the whole thing ended up having to be thrown out. But can you just picture this goat sprawled out on the futon like she is the queen of Sheba with pee and little pebbles of poo-poo everywhere. Just my husband everywhere. Was not a happy camper.
And I'm sure she chewed on some things. And
right.
Who knows?
Right. And so then on that note, somewhere during that time, actually it was before that, we decided to get sheep. Mm-hmm. And what we wanted were goat or sheep that we could have as meat sheep eventually, mm-hmm. is what we were hoping.
And there's also a noxious weed that grows out there, and yes. these sheep are the best at getting rid of it.
Right.
So we started with four.
Right. So yeah. we purchased four sheep. And we were really happy with this purchase. It was four and a ram.
Three ewes and a ram.
Three ewes and a ram. So, I mean, they're fluffy. They're full of, you know, fur. So you can't tell. Well, no. You can't tell that they're pregnant.
You really can't.
So we did not know they were all pregnant. So not expecting babies, not expecting anything. One day in the spring, I made lattes for the girls, and the girls were our oldest, so we kind of did those kinds of things together. So I made a couple of lattes. We were sitting out in the yard just enjoying the sunshine, and I look up the hill into the field, and I said to Brittany, "What is coming out of that sheep?" There were hooves sticking out, and she goes, "That's a baby." And she runs up there. Yeah. So that turned into not just one, but then another. And then before we knew it, can't even tell you how quickly we had a dozen sheep.
Yeah, we did.
It was insane. So multiplication very fast on sheep. We had no idea, especially since we didn't know they were pregnant, right?
Yes.
So there was that. And then, so tell us your stories because, you know, we've had the milking cow.
Let's see. I'm trying to think.
So when you envision these wonderful moments on the farm, what are some of the funny stories that you go back to? You were telling me one the other day.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we did name that lamb latte.
Right.
Just because it seemed fitting.
Sure.
I think the other thing was that another sheep, she was giving birth and she had twins that were tangled.
Right.
So I called up my friend whose mom, she works with dairy cows.
Right.
And she knew how to help out with that. So she came over, but she didn't do it for me.
No.
Oh, no. She told me, I'm going to teach you how to go fishing. I looked at her. I was like, okay, well, whatever we need to do to make sure this ewe is okay.
Right.
That was a very educational experience. Both the lambs were totally fine and they were the sweetest things. But
not something you saw coming.
No, not at all. I didn't realize how educational these sheep would end up being.
Exactly. Then we had one that was born with half of his front leg.
Yeah, he had a slight deformity.
So, it was, or his hoof. I think it was just his hoof. But after talking to several people, they said he is not going to do well because unless you get some sort of orthopedic thing for him. And that was just too much money. Like we had a working homestead on a budget.
Yeah.
So we could not afford to fix this lamb. We could have probably let him live, but he would have been very deformed and uncomfortable. And so the advice we were given was just have that little guy put down. And it was so hard to do. But what we learned from that, what the kids learned, because they got to watch. And that's not something, the kids who wanted to, we didn't make everybody watch. We were like, if you want to be there with him when he goes and have that experience, then to a few of you were out there.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting to me because I thought, as an adult, I could sort of like remove myself emotionally from it. But as I'm going to cry, as I watched him go limp, and I am not sappy about animals. Okay. So this is
No.
I'm not sappy at all. But literally, as I watched him go limp and saw the life go out of him, it was such a tangible reminder that life is precious no matter what, no matter what. And so And the kids were just, you could tell they were moved by it as well. But what an experience, a life experience for them to see that and right. to know before they have to experience it with a human being.
Exactly.
They could experience it with an animal and know, like, what did that feel like and what, how did that make me feel and how did I feel afterwards?
And, well, and realizing that life is precious, even if it's, you know,
right.
just a lamb that, right. you know, no one else will maybe know about.
Right.
And not being too sheltered from those experiences.
Exactly. Well, we are so far removed as a culture from death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a healthy thing. I mean, like, even when we lost Isaac, our oldest grandson, who was stillborn, we participated in every step of mm-hmm. putting him in his, you know, in his little coffin and putting him down in the ground. He was handled only by people who loved him. We did not. Your husband said no funeral home, no funeral director.
We did not want to
I wasn't
that.
Sure what to do with that at first, but as we walked through the process, I realized how healthy it was
yeah.
for all of us to do that, to be mm-hmm. that close to it. And that's how it was like 100 years ago.
And it gave us the closure we needed
exactly.
to do that ourselves.
Yes.
And we knew that we couldn't move on in a healthy way for us. We could
right.
not move on in a healthy way if we were not in charge of that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway.
And so that, you know, it's funny how that sort of the homesteading carries over into life.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good. Yeah. It was a good experience to have before that. So
it really was.
Yeah, I know, and it is. It is. It's really funny to have done that before it became a trend.
Right.
I find it hilarious sometimes to look at all the filtered Instagram pictures.
Right.
Of like the entire farm is just laid out with like the big white
Everything's
fences.
Aesthetically correct.
Yeah. And just going.
And that wasn't us.
That was not.
Our fences barely stayed up.
If you are going to afford it,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't look like that.
No, it doesn't. And especially a family of 10 on a single income.
Yeah.
But God provided everything we needed and we looked for good deals. My husband would hunt down where do we find hay? Because we, at the time, lived in a place that was snowy,
mm-hmm.
like 4 or 5 months of the year. So you yeah. had to put up hay and grain for
right.
the winter. That's expensive.
It is. It's very expensive. If you want to look into real homesteading, go look up the cost of a bale of hay or talk to a local and
right.
ask them, how much is a ton of hay? How much is a bale of hay?
Right. And then how much does that feed?
Right. And then also the feed bags.
Right.
Also very expensive. I mean, this was, 10 years ago. So I imagine it's probably more expensive now.
Right.
But yeah, just having to work through that and, you know, and of course, I'm more like a starry-eyed kid who's like, just wants to get some dairy goats and stuff.
Right.
And dad's the one who's like, okay, but financially, first of all, they have got to give us something in return in
right.
order for this to be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, because, I mean, it's not a money maker.
Right.
And I mean, it'd be great if it was a wash, but often it's not even a wash.
Right.
But you're getting healthier products, you know, raw milk, mm-hmm. fresh eggs. Mm-hmm. And so it is an investment. It ends up being an investment in your health.
Yeah. And I also think that now you have more of a chance of being able to make some money off of it. Because
That's
people
true.
Are more aware that it's better to buy locally. That's mm-hmm. been sort of a drum that's been beating long enough that
so.
If you started to say, you know what, we're going to do our meat birds and we're going to do 20 extra meat birds and we're going to offer, you know, we're going to ask
yeah.
our friends and family, are you interested in purchasing these? So you can at the least,
mm-hmm.
you might not make money, but you will cover the cost of the whole
yeah,
project. So
true.
Your food is free.
Your chances
so
are
So there are
now.
A lot of ways to make money at it. And when we were doing it, we lived way out in Timbuktu. So everybody did their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had, you know, well, a lot of people had milk goats. And if they didn't have them, they didn't want to drink goat's milk. So there was nobody to sell it to.
Yeah.
Same thing with the cow's milk. If
mm-hmm.
they had a cow, if they wanted milk, they had a cow. If they didn't want that milk, they didn't have a cow.
So exactly.
there was like nobody to sell it to.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
You know, so I do think it's better now. But
mm-hmm.
for us, it was like, okay, we have to constantly be asking ourselves, is this animal worth keeping?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
It is a little bit cutthroat.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. So we ended up, what did we end up doing with those sheep? We didn't have them all butchered.
No. I think
didn't we sold them?
We ended up selling them.
Yep.
because just the particular breed we found out was not very good at putting on like meat, muscle, right, and all that stuff. Right. And so we were like, okay.
So it wasn't going the direction we wanted to, and we would have to just keep feeding them.
Yeah, and they would just keep reproducing.
Yeah, that was the thing. They were multiplying quicker than we could keep up with.
Yeah.
And so we're like, we can't feed all these. So those that, but you know, we learned every situation, and that's the thing with homesteading. It's constantly experimenting with different things.
Yeah.
And like, you have to be up for that and ready for that.
Yeah.
Like when we got the milking cow.
Oh, like, yeah.
That what were later. Some of the scenarios? Yeah, that was later on.
I mean, first of all, I was used to dairy goats. You can just drag them along.
Right.
Not so much with the cow.
Nope.
You have to, convince them, and they're not the smartest, so convincing them is a little bit difficult.
And they're extremely scheduled.
Yes.
So, like, you have to milk them. If you milk them twice a day, you milk them 12 hours apart, you milk them at 7 a.m., and you milk them at 7 p.m.
Yes.
If you vary from that, you pay.
Yes.
Because they're not as cooperative. Nope. They seem to, like, to try to, like, want to step into the bucket more often.
They get
and they swish their tail. Mm-hmm. And so you're down there, and you're just, you know, going at it, trying to milk this cow, and the tail, they keep swishing it, and it comes around, and it comes around the side of your head, and then the little bit of hair on the end pokes into your eyeball like a whip.
Yep. And it has mud on it.
Yeah.
So one reality of dairy cows is, if they're out in the mud or something where it's rainy, you're going to be sitting there and you are going to get whipped with a muddy, poopy tail.
Right.
While you're milking.
Which we figured out, you tie it up.
Yeah.
Tie up the tail and you're a lot better business. So
the other thing is
a lot of things.
When you're milking in general, whether it's goats or cows, if it's cold outside, you do not have to worry about your hands. Those stay warm. I learned that you have to worry about your feet. Mm. Your toes can get frostbite if you live in that area, if you don't make sure you keep them warm because your feet are just sitting there.
Right.
Your hands are moving, their udders are warm. It's not a difficult thing. But I always thought, my hands would freeze. No, it was my feet.
Because your hands are working and they're on warm udders.
Yeah, exactly.
So there was this one particular story you were telling me earlier this week about fixing fences in the cold.
Oh, yes. My most sanctifying moment of my life. No, really. This is beyond kids, but I think it was the dead of January. And again, lived in the Pacific Northwest.
On the east side of Washington.
Think
Montana, Idaho, very cold and snowy.
It was very cold. I'm sure it was under 15 degrees. Mm-hmm. And the goats got out in the middle of the night. And so I had to go get my snowsuit and all my layers on and get out there, got them back in. And this fence was really chopped up. And there was no way to fix it while still wearing gloves.
Right.
So the only way to fix it was to take the gloves off and get the wire cutters and twist the wire. And of course, your hands are so incredibly cold and you're grabbing cold wire.
Because the wire is cold, yeah.
Yeah, trying to make sure it doesn't stick too much to your fingers and just fixing that. And it just like getting it, pulling it, trying to work with this wire in this dead of night, super
with a flashlight.
Cold, with a flashlight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, it made me question a few things at the time.
Right.
Do I want to keep doing this? But,
And then other times we had our milking place was a little bit further away from the house and the kids were coming up the hill with a pail of milk and they slip after all that work, they slip and fall and the whole gallon is just gone.
Yes, during the icy season.
And so
that's it.
Your pipes freeze. So there's just things that happen. Animals get sick.
Oh, the other thing with usually the snow and the ice is a big factor. But the other thing is if for some reason the water heater thing did not work on
right,
the trough.
Because you have little heaters that you plug in to heat your water trough.
In order to keep it from getting freezing. Like 2 inches of ice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes it goes out in the middle of the night or it dies or it comes unplugged. So the next morning, they still need a drink. So you have to break it up. Well, sometimes I would just decide to use my boot and just break it up because that's how I could get enough weight on it to break it. But I can't tell you how many times my boot went through the ice straight into the water trough, completely soaked.
Oh.
And I had to finish a half hour of chores like that.
Right.
With one foot that was soaking wet.
Right? Yes. Yes. So all these different things, the llama. Okay, so we decided we had gone out and visited a farm that had a bunch of different animals.
Yeah, sheep and goats.
And, but I did notice that they had llama, and they had a llama for sale. Yeah. Was he a llama or an alpaca?
He was a llama.
He was a llama.
They use them as guard animals because they will actually chase after coyotes.
That's why we decided to get him, because we thought we could use a little protection for the sheep and at the time that we had and the goats and everything. So we were like, we're going to buy a llama.
Yeah.
So we I drive out there. So I've got my 15-passenger van. We've taken out the two middle seats and all eight kids are at the back.
And the windows are not tinted on
the windows are not tinted. So we go to this farm. We pick up this llama. So I lay down a tarp on the floor of the van. This llama gets in and he sits down.
Yep.
Right. Lays down on the tarp. And we're driving down the road and down the highway with eight kids in the back. And this llama, his head is just, that's all you can see.
So if the car went by, it's the driver, llama head, kid.
We also hauled sheep in that van.
Yes.
And I thought they were going to be a lot quieter. No, maybe that was a station wagon.
It was goats. We put down tarps and it's all well and good.
And they were like,
they
decide to pee and poop.
And it is.
Which they do.
It is so strong.
Anytime. Like,
strongest ammonia smell
it
you can
so
think
bad,
of.
So bad.
So bad.
And then the sheep were just really, really loud. Like they would not quit making noise. And it was like a 35-minute drive. And anyway, lots of stories to tell. We could tell so many more. I think two more that I want to tell. I want to have you tell the one about when we first had chickens and the rooster attacked you.
Okay.
We'd been fighting this rooster off and on, and he finally just went full on at you.
Yeah.
So, right? And he pecked you, and you were upset, and you came in and told Dad, and what did he do? He went out there with a frying pan, like a skillet.
Yes, that's right. He did.
And he took the biggest swing at that thing and knocked him silly.
Yeah.
Because it's like nobody messes with my kids.
Well, I think
right?
I was 7 at the time, and normally it worked okay to go by the rooster, but I was wearing my Sunday dress and tights.
Oh.
And this thing was, it was a giant Rhode Island red rooster. Mm-hmm. This is not a small rooster.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the biggest roosters I've ever had. So,
I just went after you and
just that was it.
Drew blood and, you know, the whole thing. And so Dad was having none of it. Whacked him really good. I know some of you out there are probably going, that is terrible. Well, you know what? When it comes to your kids, he just wanted him to know that that was not okay.
Otherwise, he would have been turned into like
And I don't
like
think that he was a lot more subdued from then on. Did you notice that?
A little bit.
A little bit more subdued. The other story that I wanted to tell was we did buy this llama. I wanted to finish that story.
We
took him home, and maybe a week or two later, he looked so stately out there walking around, protecting everything, you know, how they look kind of like a giraffe, you know, with that long neck.
Yes.
And we just had fun watching him. We named him Paco. And one day, I looked up there. He was on a hillside, and he was laying down.
His head was up.
Well, actually, it was down, and I called his name, and his head came up. So I was like, oh, he's fine, because I thought there's something wrong with him.
I've been like, he's been there for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess he's okay.
But when I yelled his name and his head came up, I figured, okay, he's fine. Literally, I don't know, it was later that day or the next day, he was still in the same—I looked over, he was still in the same spot. And I called his name, and he didn't pick up his head. And I thought, oh, my gosh. I go up there, and he's dead. And we were like, what in the world? We could not figure out. He hadn't been attacked by anything. We could make zero sense of it.
And he had been totally fine.
He was totally fine up to that point. And we could not figure out what happened. And then like within, I don't know, a week or two or three, I wasn't looking for an answer, but I ran across this article that llamas are particularly vulnerable to the enzyme that is in a tick.
Yeah.
And it causes tick paralysis. And basically, they call it tick paralysis.
Yeah.
And it basically takes their life. It was the weirdest thing.
They can very easily die from tick bites. And apparently, that's true of all pack animals.
Ah, interesting.
So alpacas and llamas.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's like, well, wow. I didn't know that.
Okay. So we're going to end on one of the funniest stories I think our family ever has when it comes to homesteading, and it is the peacock story.
Oh, gosh.
So we moved to this home and had a whole bunch of acreage, But with it came a peacock. A free, we called it, it's a free peacock. Yeah. Like, wow, this is a great benefit.
They don't rehome well, apparently.
Yes, they don't, you can't move them, you can't rehome them. They have to stay at their home. And we thought, well, this is the coolest thing ever. He's really awesome. We named him Niles and he would.
Oh, and I had a hen who decided to hatch her own eggs and she decided she would attack him if he got anywhere near her babies.
Right.
And he wasn't, it was just funny.
The funniest things that he would do is he would go out there and he would open up his plume, like he was trying preening. To impress all of the chickens. He'd go out where all the chickens were, or where all the hens were, and he would do this big, and he would strut around, and they were not impressed.
And the mother hen would just go right after him,
right?
And he'd be like, what is going on?
But the bad thing was, a couple bad things, is that he would go into the rafters of our, we had like a, what do you call that? Like a three-bay car thing.
Cardboard.
And there were rafters, like a cardboard thing. And he would go up on the rafters, and he would poop on all the cars. Which drove my
Which is one thing
nuts.
I just think of every time I see any kind of free roaming chickens or ducks or poultry is I'm just like, that is a lot of cleanup.
Right.
That is a reality.
Where
of
are they pooping? That's something to think about when you're homesteading. Where's
ducks,
the poop going to go?
I have heard especially are very bad about
so
that.
So we talk about free range chickens. Oh, we're just going to let them go in our yard. Well, are you ready for the poop on the front porch? Because that's what's going
to
happen.
And your kids to be tracking that in.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's like, yeah, where's your line? I don't know. Ours was stay out there.
Yeah.
I learned one year when I planted, I thought we had this little shop and that's kind of what my kitchen window like looked across the yard at this shop. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice to have sunflowers out there growing up the side of the shop? Wouldn't that just be so cute? So I planted sunflowers along there, never thinking about the fact that we had free-range chickens, right? So as soon as they started to come up, they ate them down to the ground. It was like, oh.
So much
for aesthetics. I didn't
even
think about that. Yeah. So yeah, anytime I tried to do aesthetics, it didn't seem to work. But this peacock just got to become more and more and more of an annoyance in so many ways. It got to mating season.
Yeah.
Remember that?
And they make a lot of noise. And it sounds like a cartoon woman screaming.
It does. It's literally sounds like screaming. And they'll do it day and night.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of our bedroom, in the middle of the night, randomly this thing would scream. Well, I'm sorry. I need my sleep. Like, I'm a mom. And I mean, it's bad enough that, you know, sometimes kids get sick and you have sleep. I don't need this thing keeping me awake. So what I ended up doing was I ended up telling my husband about it. And so he started to do this thing where he would take his gun and he would shoot it off, not at the
opposite
peacock.
Opposite direction.
Just kind of like up in the air towards, you know, out towards the field or whatever. And every time he did that, this thing would actually be quiet for like a couple of days. So we're like, okay, we have a solution to the problem. This is great. Well, one day he went off, right?
It was like, yeah.
And I just said to my husband, I said, will you please shut that thing up? And so he got his gun. I hear him fire off a couple of shots. And then I see him walk in the door. And his face was like, oh my gosh. And I said, what's wrong? He said, I shot the peacock.
He totally didn't mean to.
So he's not a good shot. That's the big joke.
Yeah.
With dad. Now, if you want something, what did we tell him? If you want something to die, just have dad shoot at it, but not aim.
Yeah. We said, dad, you'll hit it. Just don't aim.
Just don't aim. That's the big joke. So thing was sitting up on a post.
Yeah.
And he randomly sort of like shot off sort of in that direction, but he didn't feel like it was that close.
I actually watched the whole thing.
Brittany saw the whole thing and I saw her face and she was like mortified. I started laughing.
I had never
it was like,
seen dad
oh
so shocked.
He
before.
Was so shocked. And I just started laughing because what can you do, you know?
Right.
So then he's like, I don't know how to get rid of this thing.
Oh, it got better.
I don't want the kids to know
about
it.
In the neck.
He doesn't know how he did that. He
Nobody
doesn't
knows.
Know how he did it. The thing fell off the post.
Oh.
And then he was sitting there going, how am I going to get rid of this thing? Because I don't want the kids to see it. So he went out and he dug a big hole. And but the problem is this thing was in full plume. So
yeah,
he's like, trying to get all these feathers in and he's having to take the shovel and crimp.
Yeah.
And finally he gets he wants it buried far enough that our golden retriever isn't going to dig it up either. So he had to do all of that. And then eventually, of course, he had to tell the kids. And I don't think anyone was overly devastated besides you because you saw the whole thing happen. But that night at dinner, it was hilarious. The kids were being loud. And my husband, he looks at all of them. He goes, "You guys better quiet down. You know what happens to things that are loud around here." And everybody just started
laughing. And that has been the joke.
It has been the big, we still joke and about think, that to this it? Day.
2 weeks later, I was at some little thrift store and I found a peacock mug.
Yep.
So every of time. Course I bought that for him. I think it was for his birthday or something. Yep.
So every time we find something peacockish, a picture, a mug, we always bring that up. So
it's for dad.
It makes for great stories, I'll have to say.
Yes, it'll be good
and story. That is just really a fraction of the stories that we could tell, but we wanted to share that with you. And we wanted to end on this note, asking the question, would we change anything? No.
Nope.
We wouldn't. We wouldn't change anything. We have all these stories. So here's the thing I tell parents all the time. What bonds people together is overcoming obstacles together. And so all the overcoming that had to happen in homesteading that we didn't know was actually going to be coming down the pike, but God knew and knew it would be a really good thing for our family. I think that was an unexpected, in the moment, sometimes stressful surprise, but ultimately a good surprise.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, farming was actually the best preparation for a kid for parenthood.
Right.
Because
a lot of that nurturing and caring and keeping and track of and record keeping.
Feeding on a routine and, you know, injuries do happen and just things like that.
And life just, and death and perseverance and resilience and
there's
teamwork.
And some training that has to happen.
Yep, lots
it's
of,
with the animals. And it's a good atmosphere for that.
Right. So problem solving. That's a huge thing.
I would say that was a big confidence booster, especially for a kid from like 14 to 18 or 19. A lot of problem solving, especially when you're the animal person. So everyone's like, so what do we do?
What do we do? Yeah,
exactly. Let me look it up.
yeah, exactly. So we want to encourage you, if this is the lifestyle you're in or are shooting for, we would never want to discourage you from that, but we thought you would get a kick out of it. And maybe just a little bit of a, you know, some cautionary tales that, hey, expect hardship, expect difficulty, but know that you can overcome it. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there is always a solution to every problem.
And that it will not look like Instagram.
Exactly.
It will look a lot more like a carport fenced in for goats.
Right.
It'll look like a lot more manure and mud and, and mess.
Exactly. So,
but
and also,
good.
Yeah, absolutely good. What is that book? Hard isn't the same thing as bad.
Yes.
Yeah. And there were hard moments and then there were really funny moments, like when you're laying out in the sun and you've got this little baby goat that's free ranging, right? And my husband was laying out in the sun, has hairy legs, and this goat would not leave the hair on his legs alone. He kept trying to eat it like it was grass or something.
Yes.
And so just things like that you
or my milk goat, it had been a late night and I had actually been in a drama performance and had been late to milk her. And so she busted out and came up to the sliding glass door and started knocking on it.
Right.
With her hoof. Hey, don't forget about me.
And this is just a little glimpse into the life of homesteading, but there are so many wonderful things about it. So if you're like at the beginning dreaming stages or you're just starting in, we just want to encourage you that it's not an all or nothing thing.
No.
Take it one step at a time, baby steps. And
functional is better.
Exactly.
Exactly. Beautiful or aesthetically pleasing.
It doesn't have to look like Pinterest, but it can still be a very beautiful life.
Yes.
All right, let's pray. Lord, we thank you for the opportunity to revisit fun memories, to talk about homesteading, to talk about that lifestyle that we raised our kids in. And that so many families either want or are trying to have at least part of that, or are shooting for that full-fledged lifestyle, Lord, we thank you that we can be content right where we are and that we can move forward in baby steps. And we thank you. I thank you that this actually is a trend because I think it's a super healthy trend for families. And mm-hmm. so we thank you for the opportunity to just talk about that and visit it. I pray that moms would be encouraged by today's episode. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right, before you go, I want to share this little testimonial from Christine. She's from Colorado, and she is sharing about her son's experience with Excel College's summer leadership program. Her son, Ben, had an amazing time there. She said his experience at the summer leadership camp took him to another level of maturity and confidence in himself, which he didn't realize he had. If he could have, he would have stayed in North Carolina to glean all there is to glean from the leaders at camp and within the college. 10 out of 10 recommend. As parents, we look forward to the day that our teens see themselves as the leaders they truly are in Christ. Sometimes it takes stepping out of their comfort zone for them to realize who they are. That's why my friends at the Excel College are hosting a summer leadership camp for teens ages 16 to 19 years old, where they will learn to discover God's truth, discern wisely, and live wholeheartedly. Ready to see your teen grow and thrive? Apply now at thexlcamp.org. I'll leave a link in the show notes. Have a great day, moms.